Okay, thanks very much to the organizers for the opportunity. So I want to tell you about light chargenos and their effects on Higgs couplings. And just to start with some motivation, so we've discovered a Higgs boson, and there's a program underway to measure its couplings. And I think it's important right now to try to understand the range of possible deviations in these couplings in various motivated BSM models. So I'm going to focus on chargenos in the MSSM. It's been less studied, I would say, typically because you have smaller contributions to the Higgs couplings. And then I'll just make a few cursory comments on sort of the interplay between these measurements and direct chargeno searches. All right, so here is the contribution. It's the one-loop diagram here with chargenos running in the loop. And we're talking about the couplings Higgs to two photons, Higgs to a photon and a Z, so the loop-induced couplings. And the first thing you notice is that the Higgs coupling to chargenos is governed by the gauge interaction. So it's the Higgs-Wino, Higgs-Eno vertex. And that's strength of G weak. So generically, you don't expect to obtain large deviations from the standard model. I'm going to talk about an exception in a minute when the chargeno is very light, even lighter than the naive left bound. And I'll try to discuss some ways that you could possibly imagine that occurring. But just to try to understand at least sort of where you expect to get the biggest enhancements in terms of supersymmetric parameter space, we can look at the energy theorem. This is the coupling, the effective coupling of the Higgs to two photons here in this Lagrangian. You can just relate that coupling to the QED beta function from the chargenos running in the loop. And so at the end of the day, you get this formula, and you can see that this coupling depends on sine 2 beta. Okay, so it's proportional to sine 2 beta. And so that's maximized as tan beta goes to 1. So you need low tan beta to get a large effect. I haven't shown you here, but you also need a light chargeno. So that's sort of obvious just from the loop, these things decouple with mass. And then you also need M2, the Wino mat, the soft mass of the Wino, close to mu. Now, just to say where we're going, we want to know what kind of level of precision we can achieve so we understand how well the Higgs coupling measurements can probe indirectly chargenos. So these are these famous plots that we've seen now showing the projections for Higgs coupling measurements. And I've circled here the coupling to photons, the Higgs coupling to two photons. And so you can see basically we can achieve 10%, maybe with LHC, maybe 5% optimistically. We've even saw some more optimistic estimates from CMS this morning. A future facility maybe could probe at the few percent level. These are in the couplings. So in the rates, which I'll be showing, sort of twice that amount, twice that percentage. One thing that's notably absent is the study of the Higgs to photon Z coupling. I think this is important and should be revisited. I don't know if there's any studies in the literature on this for future facilities, but it would be worthwhile to revisit this. All right, so here I'm just showing the maximum deviations that you can expect from chargenos, for chargenos above 100 GeV. And so what I'm showing here is the partial decay width of Higgs to two photons over the standard model value as a function of tan beta. I've fixed M2 equal to mu. That maximizes this contribution. And then I plotted several different contours showing the chargeno mass, so going from 100 roughly to 300. And you can basically see that you don't get very large contributions here. The largest contributions are of order 20% as you go to very low tan beta and very light chargenos. And so, and similarly for the Z photon coupling, you can get order 20% enhancement in the rates. You can also get suppressions, which I haven't shown here, but you can also get suppressions. And so just comparing with those projections on the previous slide, you can basically say that LHC will be able to probe chargenos up to roughly 150 GeV, maybe tan beta less than or equal to 6. And so you're not really probing that much beyond LEP, just the direct searches. A future facility probably could go up to 200 GeV and tan beta of order 20. Okay, so a fair thing I think to state is that for chargenos above 100 GeV, direct searches are going to do a much better job than indirect Higgs coupling measurements, particularly the two-photon channel. Now, I said I wanted to explore the sort of the total space of possible deviations, so I just want to, as I alluded to, think a little bit about whether the chargeno could actually be lighter than 100 GeV. And so this is a generic point for any charged fermion or scalar. So There's this one loop form factor, and you can see basically in blue curve it rises as you go towards half the Higgs mass. So there's an enhancement in that form factor. And so you could get much larger deviations if somehow there were lighter charged particles than 100 GeV. And we don't really want to live below half the Higgs mass, because then the Higgs will decay. We'll have a new 2-body decay, and it will decay with basically order 1 branching ratio. And that will be at odds with the data. All right, so this is some work going on in collaboration with Sung Hoon Jun and Carlos Wagner. And so I'll discuss in a minute a possible scenario for a light charge Geno, but here just to show you sort of the effects that you can get. So again, the same plots, just plotting the rate of Higgs to gamma-gamma with respect to the standard model, also Z-gamma with respect to the standard model. And for several different charge Geno masses, so 65 up to 100. And you can see you can get much larger effects, of course, just due to this rise of this form factor. So you can get sort of order 60% enhancement in these rates. Now, so if you actually look at the LEP searches and see if there's a way, is there some way that you could have missed the charge Geno? It's very difficult. They did a very good job at covering most of the decay channels that you could imagine. So there's one possible scenario which you could imagine a charge Geno hiding, and that is if you have this displaced Susie. Basically, the idea is that you have an LSP which has a finite macroscopic lifetime. And so it travels some distance and then decays in the detector. And the point is that LEP searches generically require all charged tracks to point back to the primary vertex. And so if they don't point back to this sort of cylinder illustrated here, then they would reject those events. So you can see basically here is an example. You have a neutrino LSP which travels some distance outside of the cylinder around the primary interaction region. It decays to 2 leptons, and one of the leptons just doesn't point back to this primary vertex region. And so this type of event would be thrown out in most analyses. Now we add to it a charge Geno, which is light, and it will decay into a lepton plus a neutrino. And so charge Geno pair production will give you 2 prompt leptons, and then neutrinos, which travel some distance and decay. And then you have to ask, what is the efficiency for those events in certain R-parity violating searches? All right, so here's one example plot showing the limits. So this is a plot of the charge Geno mass versus neutrino lifetime. And the red curve on the left shows the bound from the Aleph RPV search in the LLE channel. So I'm assuming here basically that this neutrinos decay via LLE. And so you get 2 leptons from each neutrino is displaced. And so it will have these tracks which don't point back to the primary vertex for long enough lifetimes. And so then those searches lose sensitivity for long enough lifetimes. So that's showing this bound right here, this red curve. And so everything to the past this red curve is allowed. Then if you have a lifetime which is very long, then you start seeing acoplanar leptons plus missing energy. Okay, so those would be standard searches for sleptons. And so there's a bound at very long lifetimes. But there's this region here, basically, which is still allowed by LEP searches. This would be similar, basically, for other decay modes, like through LQD operator, where you get jets instead of leptons. Now, needless to say, there's many other things that you have to check. It's just not the LEP bounds are now bounds from LHC. And so you have to check those carefully. But I don't have time right now to explain all of those limits. But it would be great to talk about that offline. All right, so just a take-home message for mass. So light charge Genos are, of course, very well motivated. We need mu to be close to MZ for sort of a natural region of parameter space in SUSY. And the question is, how can we probe such states? And so through Higgs couplings, I've shown you that it's you don't really gain a whole lot by through Higgs couplings. You can probe a little bit beyond the naive LEP bound. So maybe you can go up to 150 GeV with LHC, 200 GeV with the future collider. Really, if you want to go to higher masses, direct searches are the right way to go for charge Genos. And just to say a few comments about LHC versus linear collider, of course, some studies should be done to see the reach for LHC in different modes. LHC reach will depend a little bit more on the certain decay channel and decay mode. Whereas a linear collider reaches essentially kinematics. So as long as you look, as long as you do the search, look for the final state that you're interested in, to roughly half the beam energy. And then finally, there's this window for very light Chargenos. You can get large contributions to the Higgs couplings. But this probably doesn't require a new machine. We probably can cover it with the LHC or go ahead and look again at LEP data. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And are there any questions?
I can hear you, yes. We also have a question from Jonathan. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, just want to be clear. These bounds that you're putting in the last slide are for the ideal case where there's complete mixture of Wienos and Higgsinos?
Which bound? The bounds on the previous slide?
On the last slide, the business about less than 10 bait, 10 bait less than 6 and 150.
This is just saying that. Yeah.
So I think if I understood the question right, it's just what are these bounds, MCHI less than 150, tan beta less than 6. I'm just saying basically that for masses larger than that and tan beta values larger than that, you're not going to get measurable deviations in the Higgs couplings with LHC. Yeah, I've fixed here these to be the maximum deviations that you can possibly get. Yep. Yes.
Okay. So in your model to hide the Chargino at LEP, you had a neutrino decaying to LLE, right, to 2 leptons?
It could also be through LQD.
Okay. For the LLE model at least, have you thought about there's a CMS search for displaced leptons?
Yeah, so that one will place, I think, strong bounds for electrons and muons. So it's neutrino decaying to electrons and muons.
Right.
And so that's something that's in progress.
Yeah, I think
it will, there may be some region left at sort of the larger end of the lifetime of this neutrino lifetime, because the bounds kind of weaken there. That's one of the caveats. There are various searches that you have to check in addition to just the LEP searches, particularly dedicated displaced vertices search, vertex searches and such.
Right.
That one will.
I think sometimes that even a decay to a tau can have some efficiency, you can still get up same 2 electrons or 2 muons from that.
That's right. Yeah.
You said that you were considering this neutrino with mass around 65 dB. In that case, what's the charge threptons? What happens to the threptons with which is
the question is about the sleptons. There will be a light slepton as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the slepton could be pushed above 100 GV if tan beta is moderate, say 3 or 4.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, if it could be lighter, and then you could look for it would decay basically into Chargino, at the end of the day, it could decay into a lepton and a neutrino and a neutrino. And so you would have aquaplanar leptons plus missing energy, but there'd also be this neutrino, which travels some distance and looks like a neutral hadronic energy essentially. In those searches for aquaplanar leptons plus missing transfer of momentum, they usually put a cut on additional neutral energy. And so those events wouldn't really fall into those searches for leptons.
And Constantine. Oh, okay. We have the same question. So,
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Okay. Could you go back to where you showed my slide? Because I just have a comment on that. I wasn't as aggressive as I could have been on the left in estimating the reach for Higgs to gamma gamma. And the reason is that I only took account of the LHC capabilities up through the end of this decade.
Right.
Whereas I could have gone all the way to 3,000 inverse femtobarns if I'd been bolder. The strategy would be that the Z coupling, really, you get that fantastically at the ILC to, you know, tenths percent. And then if in the high luminosity era, the one thing that we actually have good confidence that the LHC will do is get the branching ratio for ZZ star to the branching ratio for gamma gamma to high accuracy. Atlas estimates about 2%, so that's 1% in the couplings. And it's an interesting example of the complementarity of ILC and LHC in this kind of high luminosity era. And then this error will go down to something close to 1%. So then, you know, we're not at 5 sigma for your limits, but we're at least in the game.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Okay, any other questions or comments? And if not, let's thank the speaker again.